Good morning, good people, brothers, sisters, and beautifully defiant siblings in the movement. Welcome to the unapologetic voice of labor, equity, and action. This is CWA Our Power radio show, where we amplify the organizers, uplift the everyday workers, and honor the giants whose shoulders we stand on, right here on KYOK 1140 AM and 106.5 FM in the heart of Houston, Texas. If you're rolling through H-Town or just fired up anywhere in the world, stream us live at kyokradio.org on the CWA Strong app, or catch the replay anytime by searching CWA Hour of Power on your favorite podcast platform. Because this space, this time, it's about us. That's right, it's about us. We're talking union contracts, organizing victories, labor rights, human dignity, fair pay, and bold everyday resistance to injustice in every form. So whether you're on the job, in your car, or at your kitchen table, or deep in the fight, lean in, honk your horns if you stand with workers. Throw a fist up if you know your worth. Joining me today are the fire starters and truth tellers, Makia Jones, Sir Reginald Small, Timmy Wiley, Tay Atkins, David Marshall. So buckle up, beloveds, because the power we build together, the power is ours. Our union voices are ringing in every district from Alaska to Maine, Texas to Minnesota, Canada to Puerto Rico, because we don't play at CWA. This February, we are honoring Black History Month. We're doing something intentional here at CWA Our Power. We're not only looking back, we're looking around, because Black history isn't just something we commemorate. It's something that we still being lived, still being shaped, still being fought for. And so we're going to be highlighting unlikely activists, Black Americans who didn't set out to lead movements, but whose work has reshaped how we think about labor, dignity, and human rights. These are educators, policy thinkers, transit riders, housing advocates, and grassroots organizers. People who understood that justice doesn't only live in speeches or courtrooms, it lives in workplaces, in neighborhoods, and in everyday survival. At CWA, we know that labor rights are civil rights. We know that access to fair wages, safe workplaces, transportation, housing, and accountability isn't abstract. It determines whether families thrive or struggle. And throughout this month, we'll be lifting up Black Americans whose work reminds us that organizing doesn't always wear a union jacket, but it always carries the same spirit, solidarity, courage, and collective power. This is Black History in Motion. Nia Evans, when people talk about civil rights, they don't usually talk about buses, but Nia Evans does, because she understands that transportation is labor infrastructure. Nia didn't start as a traditional activist. She was a commuter, a policy professional, a Black woman navigating a system that made getting to work harder for working class people. Long waits, unsafe conditions, routes that ignored low-income communities. She asked a simple question: who does public transit really serve? That question turned into advocacy. Nia began a leader in mobility justice, centering transit riders, especially Black workers, seniors, and disabled people who depend on public transportation to survive. And her work exposes a truth about labor movements understand well. If workers can't reliably get to work, they can't keep jobs, organize, or advance. Transportation inequity is wage theft by another name, stealing time, energy, and opportunity. Nia's activism reframes civil rights as access to time, access to safety, access to work. Her leadership shows that dignity isn't just about paychecks. It's about whether systems respect workers' lives. That's Nia Evans reminding us that every delayed bus and broken route is a labor issue. You're listening to KYOK 1140 AM and the all-new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you by visiting kyokradio.org and pressing the listen live option. Tune in live every Thursday at 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, on kyokradio.org, the CWA Strong app, or your preferred podcast player. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, Pod Chaser. Search for CWA Our Power on your favorite podcast player. Like and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at CWA National Human Rights to stay connected. Share your thoughts and join the conversation. Up next, we have T with Tay. Good morning, Tay.
Good morning, Errol. Good morning, KYOK listeners, and good morning to my union family. So this is Tea with Tay, and today we're not sipping softly. We're stirring the pot. Let me ask you something straight out the gate. Do you even know your basic human rights? Because I'm going to tell you right now, if you don't know them, somebody else will define them for you. And when other people define your rights, they will shrink them. They will ration them. They will publicize them. And sometimes they will take them. Let's be clear. Human rights are not gifts from politicians. They are not privileges given by a president. They are not dependent on the zip code, your bank account, your immigration status, your sexuality, your gender, or your race. Human rights are inherited. That means you have them because you are human. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights says you are born free, equal in dignity and rights. Not if you vote right, not if you look right, not if you worship right, equal, period. You have the right to life, the right to safety, the right to freedom of expression, the right to education, the right to work with dignity, the right to seek asylum, the right to love who you love without prosecution, and the right to practice your faith or not practice one at all. And yet here we are in 2026, still arguing about who deserves protection. We're debating whether immigrants deserve humane treatment. We're debating whether LGBTQIA plus people deserve safety. We're debating whether women deserve autonomy. We're debating whether workers deserve fair wages. Let me say something that may shake the table. When you debate someone's humanity, you are already on the wrong side of history, because rights are not conditional. If your freedom only works when someone else is silenced, that's not freedom. That's dominance. And dominance has never built a just society. Let's talk about America for a second. We love the quote of the Constitution. We love the wave flags. We love to talk about freedom, but freedom without equality is marketing slogan. Civil rights exist because human rights were denied. Workers had to fight for 8-hour days. Black Americans had to fight for the right to vote. Women had to fight even to be seen as full citizens. LGBTQIA plus communities are still fighting for safety in schools, in healthcare, and in the workplace. Now, why? Because knowing your rights and demanding your rights are two different things. You can know them quietly, or you can defend them loudly. And here on Tea with Tay, we don't whisper about justice. Let's break something down clearly for the folks listening. Human rights are universal. Civil rights or how governments are supposed to protect those rights inside a country. So when policies strip protections, when law targets certain communities, when radics dehumanize groups of people, this is not just politics. This is a human rights issue. If someone can be detained without dignity, that's a human rights issue. If someone fears violence for who they are, that's a human rights issue. If someone works full-time and can't afford housing, that is a human rights issue. And before somebody says, well, what about my rights? Let me say this calmly, but firmly. We are not pie. Someone else having theirs does not mean you get less. Equality is not subtraction. And here's the theory part. Some of us only care about rights when it hits our front door. When it's your child denied healthcare. When it's your job cut without protection. When it's your speech restricted. When it's your body regulated. suddenly you understand. But justice that only works when it benefits you is not justice, it's convenience. If you were silent when others were stripped of dignity, do not be shocked when their racial reaches you. Because history shows us something over and over again. Rights are lost gradually, quietly, piece by piece, until one day you wake up and realize the protections you thought were permanent were never guaranteed. They were never maintained by people who refused to be silent. So I'm asking you today, do you know your rights? Have you read them? Have you taught your children them? Have you defended them when someone else have you defended them when someone else's were under attack? Or have you only reposted memes? Because awareness without action is decoration.
Hold on, Tay. Hold on now. I got to jump right in here. Because we keep acting like human rights are some abstract concept discussed in classrooms and courtrooms. No. Human rights are kitchen table conversations. They are about whether your grandmother can afford her medication. They're about whether a trans child feels safe walking into school. They are about whether an immigrant mother is treated like a human being and not a headline. And let me say this boldly, silence is complicity. Silence means you agree. You cannot say you believe in freedom and then look away when entire communities are targeted. You cannot shout liberty and then justify discrimination. You cannot demand respect while denying it in others. Human rights are not a buffet where you pick the ones that make you feel comfortable. If you believe in dignity, you believe in it for everybody. And if that makes you uncomfortable, maybe sit with discomfort instead of attacking the people demanding equity, because justice has always been disruptive.
Who, Tamia? So you came in hot and she's right. Justice is disruptive. It disrupted segregation. It disrupted discriminatory marriage laws. It disrupted exploitive law practices. And it will continue to disrupt the system that thrives in equality. So here's the assignment for today. T family, go read the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Read the Bill of Rights. Understand the difference between a policy preferred and a human rights violation. And then ask yourself, am I defending human dignity constantly, consistently, or only when it benefits me? Because the measures of a just society is not how it treats the powerful, it's how it protects the vulnerable. And if we don't protect each other's rights, we will watch them disappear together. So this is Tea with Tay. Stay informed, stay loud, and stay grounded in the truth. And never forget, your humanity is not up for debate. Back to you, Errol.
That was some hot tea this morning. Thank you, Tay. You're listening to KYOK 1140 AM and the all-new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you by visiting kyokradio.org and pressing the listen live option. Tune in live every Thursday, 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific on kyokradio.org, the CWA Strong app, or your preferred podcast player, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, Podchaser, Amazon Music. Search for CWA. Hour of Power on your favorite podcast player. Like and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at CWA National Human Rights to stay connected. Share your thoughts and join the conversation. Up next, we have the Marshall Minute with David Marshall. Good morning, David.
Good morning, family, and welcome to the Marshall Minute, where today we're going to talk about connection as a form of medicine. Connection as a form of medicine refers to the scientific recognition that a social connection is fundamental human need that directly impacts your physical and mental health, often as powerful as traditional medical treatments. Strong relationships are often considered a vital sign in lifestyle medicine. They're crucial for managing chronic conditions. Humans are wired to connect. This need is as fundamental to our biology as rest, food, and movement. The relationships we build with family, friends, and community bring us joy and comfort, as well as it protecting our health in multiple ways. One of those ways is a longer life expectancy. People with strong social ties live longer. There have been medical reviews that have found a 50% increase in life expectancy compared to those with weaker connections. Lacking connection can be just as harmful as smoking up to 15 cigarettes a day. But it also lowers the risk of chronic disease. Strong connections reduce the risk of heart disease, stroke, dementia, depression, and anxiety. Poor connection, by contrast, though, raises heart disease risk by 29% and stroke by 32%. But it also strengthens our immune function. Having social support improves recovery from illness, it lowers inflammation, and it strengthens the immune response. In cancer patients, higher social support is linked with better survival rates. Loneliness and isolation are emotional burdens, and health risks have reached epidemic levels. We saw that with COVID-19. That pandemic magnified disconnection, and loneliness still remains high. About 1 in 6 people worldwide report feeling lonely, and this toll spans every life stage. In adolescence, they experienced loneliness as they navigate peer approval and rejection. New parents experience stress and anxiety and isolation, and older adults face higher risk of chronic illnesses like depression and premature death when they are disconnected. One of the reasons why isolation can be so damaging is that it fuels unhealthy behaviors like poor diet, smoking, inactivity, heavy drinking, and it worsens your mental health, increasing depression, anxiety, and suicidal ideation. And so with people with existing illnesses, disconnection erodes networks of care and compounds health risk. So what are some of the barriers to connection? Just as access to nutritious food or spaces for movement or nature is uneven, so too is access to social connection. Structural barriers like neighborhood disinvestment, limited transportation, caregiving, job demands, stigma, and physical inaccessibility make it harder for some people to build and sustain relationships. If we know connection is vital to health, then we must embed opportunities for belonging into communities and spaces where isolation runs deepest. Through workplaces and schools, structured acts of recognition and inclusion, that all can help reshape whether people feel they belong. For example, peer recognition systems have been tied to greater helping in behavior and improved morale. Our build environment matters too. Walkable streets, parks, libraries, and community centers create everyday opportunities for connection. And when cities and towns invest in shared spaces, from green parks to shaded benches, they help build healthier, more connected communities. And in this age of constant digital contact, it's also worth remembering that the quality of relationship matters over quantity. True connection does not come from the number of likes or followers, but a handful of close, trusted relationships, like the ones you build face to face, or in meaningful exchanges where people feel seen, heard, and supported. These are the relationships that carry us through the highs and lows, the ones where we can celebrate life's milestones, lean on each other in emergencies, and find steady support during life's smaller crises. There are also the people who remind us to schedule that checkup we've been putting off, or even sit beside us in the waiting room when we need the extra encouragement. So what are some ways that we can strengthen that connection? One of those ways is to reach out brief, even if it's brief, a brief phone call or a check-in, and that also can include trading a meme, all right? That can lift somebody's mood, and it could also lift your mood and lift the mood for the other person. And then trade the distraction for presence. Instead of scrolling during a break, invite a colleague for a walk or briefly chat with a neighbor. You know, and then try to start anchoring rituals of connection. You know, weekly family dinners, a Sunday phone call, or check-ins with a friend, or volunteering. All those things can help steady touch points of belonging. But also, notice the people who might be left out. Extend an invitation to an older neighbor, a new parent, or a colleague who may need connection. And so, you know, when I think back to the times that I nearly canceled social plans, only to be glad that I didn't, I realized that the science matches my lived experience. In-person connection leaves us stronger, healthier, and more resilient. And so in closing, the small choice to show up ripples outward, and it improves our individual well-being as well as the health of our communities. So let's all say yes to connecting, and let's keep showing up for each other and make sure every day we are more healthy by staying connected. And this, folks, have been the Marshall Minute, where living well is the greatest act of love. And I'm gonna kick it back to you, Errol.
Thank you so much, David. Look like Reginald has something to say. Come on, Reginald.
I do have something to say. Good morning, Errol, and good morning, KYOK Radio listeners. This was such a wonderful segment, David. And it goes back, and I'm going to pick on Mykia just a little bit here, but it goes back to some of the most vulnerable and loneliest people are those that are subjected to that text messaging. Or you actually pick up a phone, you call a niece, and you want to have a conversation, and they actually text you back. It's that unsocialized, that lack of socialization that can help add to that. And I think we need to remember that everyone is not a Facebook person. Everyone is not electronic text messaging. We need to remember not to leave out those people who still would truly benefit from a conversation. I mean, with your mouth, not with your fingertips, a conversation of communication, the old fashioned way. I think we just need to remember that. I think our technology is adding to this spirit of loneliness.
So is that why you don't text me back when I text you?
I'm trying to see how that was picking on me, because I called this. I'm like,
I got you, Mykia. He ain't gonna start this mess
like,
today.
How is that? Because I called Reginald the other day. He sent me directly to voicemail, and then I text him, and then he responded. And so I'm trying to figure out.
He has his picks and chooses. That's what it is.
But
oh, miss himself.
I do have something to say here based on what David said and what Tay said. And I think that we maybe later, guys, and you guys tell me, and listeners, you chime in and tell us how you feel. We need to have conversations about rebuilding community, whether it's community in the workspaces, it's community within your own families, in your actual communities, in your neighborhoods, in your union, or in other places or groups. Like, I feel like we've lost our sense of community, like David and Reginald and Tay are saying. And I think that that's something that we need to maybe tap into and explore, because I think a great show of community right now is what's happening in Minnesota, right? But that's not happening everywhere. And I think that as we build that community, we build that collective power, and that'll help us, I think, progress and move forward in a way that we, in my opinion, need to as a society. But I just wanted to step in here after Reginald attacked me and ask you all, as my community, how you all felt about that.
Came to your aid.
That's a good question. I mean, that's a good question. And you did bring up a point that we're talking about, the sense of community that we saw in Minnesota, that I'm actually deeply encouraged by. But as you witness that, there's also this thing out there that is saying that that was the sense of community that was established through protesting, through activism. All of that stuff was perceived in some groups as a negative. And it has sent a confusing message, as if those people did something wrong. Now, of course, we know that as activists, that the only way that you bring attention to a matter is not the only way, but one of the valuable ways that we've always brought attention is through protesting. And there's no way I'll ever see that as a bad thing when you're protesting in the right way. And no one gets to decide what way is the right way of protesting. So that's a very important point you brought up, but I'm encouraged by what I've seen there. And I don't forget Los Angeles, the same thing happened there, and it's happening in many other places that we are using protesting as a way of building that sense of community and protecting educating our communities. And I think we're going to see more of that as we go on. By the way, I think I just saw an article where there has been I don't know what the word he's using, that basically Minnesota, the action, the surge upon Minnesota has been halted.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, I saw that, and I think that brings it right to what you're going to talk about anyway, about the legality of human beings and immigration and human rights. So you might as well just keep on going, Brother Small.
I believe that's Errol's piece, but I certainly will have something to say, Sister Jones.
Well, I just want to throw this in because David kind of sparked something right here, and all of us are activists. And when it comes to other individuals complaining about, groups gathering, et cetera, we know that we are activists. And if you are an activist, you have to act like an activist, you have to talk like an activist, walk like an activist, think like an activist, smile like an activist, because you are an activist, and don't back down from it. You're listening to KYOK 1140 AM and the all new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you by visiting kyokradio.org and pressing the listen live option. Tune in live every Thursday at 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific on kyokradio.org, the CWA Strong app, or your preferred podcast player, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, Podchaser, Amazon Music. Search for CWA Hour of Power on your favorite podcast player. Like and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at CWA National Human Rights to stay connected. Share your thoughts and join in the conversation. Up next, we're going to be talking about no human is illegal. And today, this conversation is going to make a lot of people uncomfortable, but this discomfort is often the first step toward growth. We want to start with a simple statement: no human is illegal. Now, that doesn't mean laws don't exist. It doesn't mean borders don't exist. It means human dignity exists before law. So today's show isn't about politics, it's about human rights, history, and asking ourselves this hard question: what have we've been taught about immigration, and where did those beliefs come from?
When we talk about immigration, the language matters. Words shape how we see people. When we label a human being as illegal, we stop seeing them. A parent, a worker, a neighbor, a child. Human rights tell us something important. Your worth doesn't come from paperwork. Intentional laws recognize the right to seek safety, the right to family unity, the right to life and dignity. Those rights exist before someone ever fills out a form. So the question isn't, do we have immigration laws? The real question is, do our laws reflect our values or our fears?
Yeah, and one of the things is that's most common things people say is, why don't they just come here legally? Well, that's a part that most Americans were never taught. For millions of people, there's no legal line. No family sponsor, no employer sponsor, no available refugee slot. If you're fleeing violence, poverty, or a climate disaster, the system says wait. And that wait can be 5, 10, 15 years, sometimes forever. So even if you do qualify, you got to look at the cost. That's staggering. Everything from legal fees, filing fees, medical exams, travel, it can easily cost anywhere from $10,000 to $20,000. And so you have to really, you have to ask yourself honestly, how many working class Americans could afford that? And I can tell you, if it's me and I'm looking at my starving child and I can cross this, this plane and give them an opportunity to feed that child, I'm gonna take that, I'm gonna take that chance every time, and I have to put myself in that situation. If I'm fleeing a war-torn country, if I'm, fleeing famine, I'm gonna take that chance, because, these folks is a majority of these folks are good people that are just trying to, make a living, and we gotta maintain that human dignity within this.
Oh, come on, Reggie.
Well, you all keep using the word human. David just said human dignity. I believe a big piece of this, and I don't know, Errol, whether we're going there or not, going to this place, but I'm going there, is one of the biggest tactics in which we can violate humans is by the process of dehumanization. And it's a very old tactic that is being used. And if you notice anyone that it looks like we're getting ready to target, not we, but when people are getting ready to target a group of people, they start by dehumanizing them. They start by name calling them, and in many ways, associating them with some kind of, in some cases, animals. And so once you start planting that seed and putting it out there, it's easy to say they shouldn't be here, or you treat them badly, or you don't give them the dignity and respect that you would give other humans because you've dehumanized them and you've made this okay to treat people this way. So they're not entitled to the same rights as the other humans here.
Absolutely. Even
So,
on a
so,
basic
so.
level, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, even on a basic level, the term immigrant makes people think that the person is less than. Working in the airline industry, I have encountered people who have gone into other countries and they see the line that says immigrations and they think they're asking, where do they go? Because they're not an immigrant. Well, you are an immigrant if you're going into someone else's country. And they felt like they were less than, or that was a less than or a derogatory term for them to have to stand in the immigrations line. And we have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of work to do from the beginning.
All right, so you two, you all write y'all notes down, and we're gonna come back to this because we're gonna get into dehumanization in just a few minutes. And you all have brought up some good points. But before we start talking about dehumanization, let's go back and talk about history, because history exposes the biases, and we have to talk about that. And that is why today individuals are trying to erase history. Now, when America was founded, there was, and y'all correct me if I'm wrong, but there was no visa system. There was no green card. There was no citizenship test. And if you were European and white, you showed up and you stayed. Meanwhile, enslaved Africans were denied freedom. Indigenous people were denied citizenship on their own land. Chinese immigrants were legally excluded. Mexican families had borders moved over them. So when people say, my family came the right way, what they often mean is the door was open when my family arrived. That's not blame, that's truth. And immigration didn't get broken by migrants, it got restricted and selectively, touch your neighbor and say selectively enforced.
This is where the self-reflection comes in. Ask yourself, why do some immigrants get sympathy and others get suspicion? Why do accents matter? Why does skin color still shape credibility? Bias doesn't always look like hatred. Sometimes it looks like silence. Sometimes it looks like assumptions. Human rights call us to pause and ask, who taught me what to fear? And who benefits from that fear?
Well, and believing that no human is illegal that doesn't mean chaos. It just means we got to create smarter systems. And that may look like a modern work visa system that will match real labor needs, or a faster asylum processing, legal status with accountability, ending the criminalization of just existing. This order doesn't come from cruelty, it comes from a functioning policy. But I have to, I always, when I think about the foreigner, there was something, I don't know where I heard it, it said, when a foreigner resides among you in your land, you don't mistreat them. The
Oh, I
foreigner
know where you
residing
got that
among
from.
you must be treated as your native born, and love them as you love yourself, for you were foreigners in Egypt. I heard that
Come on,
somewhere,
Deacon David.
but I don't remember where I heard that from, but I heard that somewhere.
It's a very old good book. I've read it a couple
Very
times
old good book. My
myself.
grandma had it. My great grandma
Yes,
used
it
to
was
study
always
it.
open on
I think.
the table. It was always left open, and sometimes I'd read something out of that thing.
Very
I think
powerful
it's the number
book.
one best-selling book ever, though, if I'm not
I
mistaken. I
think
think
so.
that's literally,
People
I
gather
think
every Sunday just to hear
my.
pages ratcheting from it. Hello.
Exactly.
But I'm going to just chime in really here, talking about just to go a little further and expand on what David said. And y'all know I like to ask questions that I don't have the answer to. And so my question is, I've never met someone that came back from a vacation from one of these countries from where these immigrants are coming from. And they were like, oh, it was the worst country ever. I went on vacation and it was nothing but criminals and I had the worst time ever and they're the worst people and I wouldn't let them near my child and they're lazy. And so I'm trying to figure out, and you guys, this is where I need your help, how the same person that you were fellowshipping with and enjoying your vacation with in Mexico is a different person because they decided to come to the United States.
That's where those
Come on,
biases come
Reggie.
in. Go ahead,
That's
Bob.
right. Biases, major biases. Come
Yeah,
on, Reginald.
it's definitely biases, but if you're talking about when one is on vacation, these people are serving them. They're
Not necessarily, right? I'm looking at it
That's the way they look
from,
at it, though. But
yes.
let me frame it this way then, right? I'll frame it this way. When you go on vacation to someone else's country, right? Whether they're the concierge at the hotel, whether they work at the airport, whether you're going to their restaurant, whether you're getting a yoga class from them, whatever service they're, whether you're just walking past them on the street, right? Whether you're just on a shuttle with them. My thing is that is their home country, their native land, right? They are the citizen there, right? And you don't have the fear of going there and being around them. Let me frame it that way to make it a little bit better, right? You're not fearful of them when you're going there to utilize their services. However, if they come here and utilize any of our services, there's an issue and they're the same person. Is that better?
I totally get what you're saying, and it's one of those deals that standard is being it's across even with visits. We saw it with the Super Bowl halftime show. Folks are upset because it was all in Spanish, but that's the language this man songs was in. When American bands go overseas, they don't change the lyrics to their songs to suit everybody. But that's an inherent need at this day and age for acceptance. And so I think that it really starts, with programs like this, where we're educating folks, if they're open to listening. We're educating folks on, putting a face, putting a human identity on some of these stereotypes that are being forced down our throats, constantly in social media and in the news and stuff. And we have to take ownership of it and correct it, even though we know that it's being directed by forces above us, that it's trying to create an environment that we just don't see. I travel, in Latin America a lot, and it's beautiful, and the people are beautiful, and they're the same beautiful people that come over here looking for an opportunity. It's not any different for me, but it's all in your perception of it, and I think a lot of that has to do with, programming, and we got a lot of work to do to deprogram some of the harms that have been programmed in people for the last, 15 years.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And one of the things that we just got through having the Super Bowl over the weekend, and everybody was in an uproar over Bad Bunny. But you like to go vacation in Puerto Rico. You there's a lot of misinformation out there. Puerto Rico is a part of America.
Well, and my issue with that is that, we had an alternative, halftime because it was the All-American one. But when we look at the history, like you were speaking earlier about the history of stuff, we've had all kinds of foreign-born halftime entertainment. We've had Coldplay, we've had U2, we've had Phil Collins, and there wasn't any anti, UK halftime shows. So I think this is all intentional. What I
It
saw on Super Bowl Sunday was a beautiful culmination of different Latin cultures all infused on the same stage. There were folks from all different Latin communities that felt represented,
Yes.
that were not normally represented in a, on a stage that big. And it was nothing but
Right.
love, man. I saw like pictures of folks at Texas Live. I mean, folks was going crazy. And I didn't understand a word, but I don't understand opera, but it doesn't negate that it's beautiful music.
Well,
And one of
the beauty of the beauty of it all is you don't have to like it. It's
just
okay
move to the beat.
if you didn't like the halftime. And I believe that a whole lot of it is propaganda. We've been conditioned even well before the show, before we knew what it was. We had already been conditioned that we're not supposed to like it, that it was controversial and all that. But I want to go back to this immigration system and the talking points that are I often put out about it. I mean, how many times have we heard that millions and millions and millions of people came across the border in this last administration and all that? And I just wonder when I hear that, and I'm sitting there thinking, if they came across illegally, how do we count them? Did they check a box and say they were rapists and killers? I mean, how
I'm
do we
so glad you
track
said.
that?
I'm so glad. I think it's a Ring camera on the wall. Never mind.
How do we track that? And of course, I'm not going to pretend that perhaps I think we can all agree that the immigration system is probably the one of the most broken systems that we have, and it probably always has been. That's not to be blamed on one administration over the other. I think there are some improvements that could be done there. But when you start talking about these numbers, and I'll throw out some more numbers, you sent over 3,000, maybe 4,000 federal employees to Minnesota to capture 3,000 very bad people. I mean, the numbers, there's something wrong with that. I believe that that's all just propaganda and just stuff that we're being fed. And guess what? Somebody is actually believing that. And in some cases, you don't know what to believe because I'm sure there are numbers there, but are we fudging them just a little bit just to make our case? And then my last point, David, and then you can jump right on back in. If it's so broken, where is the plan to fix it? Just going
There's
in
no
and
plan.
deporting people out. I mean, how do you fix it to make it a more acceptable immigration system? I would love to see the plan, and I would welcome a plan that made sense.
And
Well,
so I guess we're going to eliminate us being a melting pot as well. That I
yeah, just take
digress. Go
that
ahead,
on out of
Dave.
there, because clearly
Well, and
that's
they
just the
know the
concept.
numbers because most of the people come through ports of entry. It's not people just running across the desert. They're coming through ports of entry through the asylum system. So they have numbers on that. It's just like you said, how they frame it. We were told that it was going to be rapists, murderers, drug dealers, and all that. Well, they're going to schools, they're going to hearings, they're going to construction sites. that's not where a lot of rapists, murders, and drug dealers are. So we're seeing them fill quotas on the people that the very people that they said they were not going after. And so at the end of the day, it's just a power move for show because, you know, that's what they said they wanted to do. But it affects us all. All of those workers that are over here contribute something. You know, they're not paid in cash. They get a check like everybody else, and they get
And
taxes
they
took
pay
out.
taxes.
And
Yes.
so there's tax revenue coming out, and they don't qualify for any of the benefits. So they get no benefits from the
Thank
taxes
you.
that they have.
Go back to that because
Yes.
that's the part that I need people to understand. I just need you to say again that I'm gonna woman-splain this and then I'm gonna need you to mansplain it. They pay taxes, but they cannot receive any benefits because they are not citizens. Now your turn, David.
Right. And the thing is that where they get that confused is that we have laws on the books to not let people die that are seeking medical care. So there are instances where an undocumented person will receive emergency health care, but that is law to take care of somebody that's in need. And it's no different
Yes.
than somebody that doesn't have health insurance. They will get that need will get met in emergency conditions. So they're taking little fragments of truth and twisting it to create their own reality. But in real world, they don't get any benefits because you have to be a citizen to get all those benefits.
And I
And the
would just like
tax
to say
structure.
something. Go ahead.
And I was just going to say, and from my last count, immigrants pay $92 billion in taxes
That
Per
is
year.
correct. 92
Per
billion, that revenue that we get from undocumented workers
year.
yes per year.
Per
year, yes.
Well,
And Bill.
I guess we'll need all that to finance the big, beautiful bill.
Okay, now what I was gonna say, speaking on something that David said, was they're tasked with filling quotas. And I just think that it is horrendous that in 2026, people are being paid to capture other people. There should not be a thing where you have a set number of people to capture and detain. I just think that's insane. That's inhumane that you're being told to go out there and hunt people down.
Well,
I'm sorry, Virginia. Go
that's
ahead.
not a,
Go ahead.
you know that, Makia, that's
That's
not
not
a
a
new
new
system.
thing.
That is not a new
That's
concept.
not a new
No.
thing, baby.
Come through
Police
Black History
reform.
Month. That's not a new thing. I mean, the patty rollers, the patrollers. I mean, that's not a new thing.
No, slave patrollers.
Yes. See, I like it when
Okay.
y'all pick up what I'm putting down
Isn't there not a
before it
sheriff's
even hit the
department?
ground.
Or was it the police department was formed behind that?
It was the sheriff.
The sheriff's department.
Oh, y'all get silent now,
No, I'm just saying, well, come through Black History Month facts. I'm just saying
huh?
that here's where I'm getting at. Why is it that we have to keep repeating the same infractions and mistakes against humanity in a different way, under a different name or under a different marketing strategy? I don't understand why we can't see that it is the same thing continuing to happen over and over again. Like they may select a new face for it, a new color for it, a new group of people for it, but it's the same thing. And so if it was wrong to go out and hunt people down because they were black or brown or try to and name them slaves, even the free ones, it's the same thing as hunting down a person because they're black or brown and saying that you're capturing them because they're illegal, because it's been proven numerous times that most of the people that they've been capturing are supposed to be here. Like you're
I'm gonna tell you, Makia,
well, not
why.
supposed to be here. I'll say, let me correct myself because that wasn't even correct. They are legally here. I'll say that.
I'll tell you, Makia, if you don't mind me. I'll tell you why Reginald Small's opinion of why we keep repeating this. And I'm gonna make it more specific because this is Black History Month that we're celebrating. It is because we're living in a time that until we enter into a state of crisis, We don't want to hear about the old stuff and what's used to be. So we don't want to hear that. So we're not talking it. We're not talking about the historical aspect and the importance and why we celebrate Black history and why on programs we actually take a look back. And even now we always look at, we don't want to talk about Martin Luther King anymore. We don't want to talk about Malcolm X. We don't want to talk about Rosa Parks. We want to find a new person to talk about. So therefore, we're forgetting where we actually came from. So I think it's important to this intersectionality that you, my key, and me and my key have been talking about, that we have to continue to talk about our histories. We have to continue to support organizations dedicated to preserving, promoting research in our history. We have to support our museums that are under attack and possibly eradicating very important, uncomfortable parts of our history so that we do not have to continue to repeat the same thing. And my philosophy is, if you're repeating it, you didn't get it the first time.
Well, they keep erasing the history. That's the
No,
thing.
no,
So
no, no,
that's
no,
why
no,
we
no,
want
no,
to.
no. That word they cannot erase history. Can't nobody tell your story, Errol Minor, like you can tell it. No one, we have not granted anyone permission to tell our history. It is up to us to tell our own history.
And that's what I was just about to ask you. So are we telling our history?
I think, okay. Now that's a very nuanced question, right? Well, I'm going to give you a very nuanced answer because I do. History is being told, right? But what version? I'll say it that way. Because for me, I'm a Black person, okay? So African American, whatever you want to call it. And so my history is American history. Slavery that happened in America is part of American history. The civil rights movement that occurred in the United States of America is a part of American history. And I'll go back further. When I say slavery that happened in America is a part of American history, that means slavery that happened on the continents of the Americas is American history. And we like to pretend that only the nice things are American history, right? Like we can only talk about the nice things. So we can't talk about slavery. We can talk about oh my gosh, what is the word I'm looking for? Oh my goodness. Genocide. We can't talk about genocide. We can't talk about anything that is negative or negative feeling that has happened in the United States. We are told not to do that. We are told that we don't live anymore, they live there anymore, that we moved on from that and all of those things. And that's why I feel like, yes, history is taught, but they don't teach the root of it. They don't teach the negative aspects of it. They don't always teach the cause of it because a lot of times you don't have social change until you have an injustice.
So look like we might be able to continue this a little bit more and go a little bit more in depth on next week. What do you guys say about that? Because I have some more questions. I really do.
I think we can keep going.
Because
Keep it
my
on
things
going. Keep on. Keep on. Keep
my,
going.
my
Rolling.
okay, my mind, my what I'm thinking about is if the legal path costs 10, 15 $1,000. Who's designed for that? Who has that? That's one of the things. And then, is it possible? Is it truly possible to believe in borders and still believe in dignity?
I think you can walk and chew gum at the same time. I think you can be
Really?
humane and have a system in place that gives people a pathway. I mean, and it used to not be a partisan thing. Democrats and Republicans, dating all the way back to Reagan era, agreed that there needed to be some type of pathway to citizenship because there is an inherent need for the labor that a lot of, immigrant workers provide. It's one of those things where, it benefits the communities that they go to. It creates plenty of competition, and it helps keep folks gainfully employed, and it supports and contributes back to your communities. So I just think that there's certain powers that be that took the opportunity to use this as a platform to do their bidding, but in real life it has real life consequences that are affecting people that were just trying to better their lives. And that's what I thought America was supposed to be, the light on the top of the hill, we're supposed to be the good guys.
Well, I haven't, you asked us our opinion on it, right? If you can believe in borders and then believe in crossing them with dignity. Now, for me, I personally have a really hard time with the concept of borders. I do. Because basically it's like whoever at the, whatever time decided, or whoever had the most money or at the most power at the time decided this particular territory belongs to me or to us or whoever I deem it so. And then these are the rules here. And I just don't understand that concept. So for me, no, I do not believe in just the border aspect of it in general, but that's just my own humble opinion.
I actually get the border concept. I mean, battles have been fought behind these borders. Now, it's no need in trying to go too far backwards and figure all that stuff out. But I think fundamentally, Makia, I understand what you're saying, but I do get the borders. But I still believe, and this is my last statement on this one today, is that this political grandstanding that is taking place is not helping the situation. All it's doing is dividing those already here within the borders. It's causing turmoil, and there is no answer, no solution. There is no one actually sitting down trying to come up with a plan that I know of. And if they're doing it, it hasn't been televised, and a statement hasn't been made. So that's what's concerning to me. So you have regular, everyday people who are just trying to go to work, feed their families, not looking for drama in their day, being impacted by this political grandstanding and quota relief.
Well, we're going to close this out right here, and then we'll pick this back up on next week because I think we have more to say on this particular topic. America wasn't built by perfect people who waited patiently. It wasn't built by people who took risks, crossed borders, and dreamed of more. The question before us isn't whether laws exist. The question is, can we see each other as humans before we see each other as categories? No human is illegal. And understanding that starts with unlearning what we were taught to fear. This is CWA Hour Power Radio Show. Stay with us and stay human as we come down to the final minutes of the show. An hour is not long enough to be with you, and a week is too long to be away from you. You have been tuned into the CWA Hour Power Radio Show. I hope something you heard today has inspired you to take action toward creating positive change in the world. Every person has the power to make a difference, no matter how small. And by working together, we can create a world where human rights are respected and valued. So I encourage each of you in the listening audience to reflect on your role in promoting human rights to effect change in your communities and beyond. Know that you are not alone in your quest for a more just and equitable world. When faced with injustice, it can be easy to lose hope and give up. But remember, justice may be slow like the truth, but when it finally comes, it will stand. Until next Thursday, 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, right here on KYOK 1140 a.m. and the all-new 106.5 FM, KYOKradio.org. See you next week.